Hello there. Today is Wednesday, July 6th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Laurie London in Washington. Coming up, a very big day on the U.S. presidential campaign trail. New insight into the Islamic State group's strategy.
NASA did it again.
High fives and hugs as the Juno spacecraft officially enters Jupiter's orbit. A tech-savvy first for the Summer Olympics. Also ahead, the latest from Hollywood, including big problems for one of the stars of the hit series, Grey's Anatomy. It's all on today's International Edition. Glad you could be here today. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation says it will recommend that no criminal charges be brought against Hillary Clinton for her use of a private email server while she was Secretary of State. This lifts a major political and legal hurdle for the presumptive Democratic presidential candidate. Still, FBI Director James Comey on Tuesday sharply condemned Clinton and her colleagues at the State Department for what he said was their extremely careless handling of classified material they sent to each other via the server she established at her home in New York.
There is evidence to support a conclusion that any reasonable person in Secretary Clinton's position or in the position of those with whom she was corresponding about those matters should have known that an unclassified system was no place for that conversation.
But Comey said in an extensive probe of thousands of Clinton's emails, couldn't find evidence that she clearly and willfully sought to violate U.S. laws, and that, quote, no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case against her based on the evidence uncovered in that investigation. Let's talk more about what happened with this and later on the campaign trail with VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Catherine, a big day for Hillary Clinton all the way around.
The announcement from the FBI, there will be no criminal charges in the investigation involving her emails, which means that pretty much this issue has been laid to rest for the rest of her presidential campaign. Now, certainly, there are always going to be voters out there who will have concerns connected to her, but this really means that there won't be any other surprises. There won't be any other big moments where she has to defend herself. So really a good day for her campaign.
But do you think that Republicans will continue to put her on the defensive over this? Because the FBI director still had some pretty scathing comments regarding the situation.
Oh, even absolutely. He didn't. You know, the FBI director said that there were definite issues with her handling of the emails. And in my time on Capitol Hill, as the reaction rolled in, Republicans were already saying that this was ridiculous, that this shouldn't have happened, that there were still concerns about the way she handled all of this. And I think that you'll continue to see that reaction from them even as the campaign goes on.
The FBI director, he's a pretty respectable person who actually worked under Republican administrations.
No, that's right. And of course, you can't go any higher up than the FBI director. It doesn't go anywhere from here if he says there isn't going to be any charges. But there's still that lingering sense of unease, particularly sometimes when it comes to Hillary Clinton, who has had her authenticity and her credibility, you know, questioned in past years. And there will always be voters who will have those issues with her. But in terms of an actual investigation and the process from here on out, it stops here.
But the day really ended well for Hillary Clinton, particularly on the campaign trail in North Carolina, big swing state. I don't know how she could have gotten a bigger endorsement.
I'm here today because I believe in Hillary Clinton. And I want you to help elect her to be the next president of the United States of America. That's why I'm here.
So, right. I mean, on a day when she learned that there would be no criminal charges in her email investigation, then she got this big boost from the sitting president, which as a presidential candidate, that's what you want. You want that moment when the person who's been in the Oval Office for all of these years turns and says, this is the person that you should be voting for. And President Obama really came out in full force for Hillary Clinton, who you have to remember was once his rival for the Democratic presidential nomination. He was standing there at the rally in North Carolina and said, "No man or woman has ever been more qualified to be the president of the United States than Hillary Clinton," which is really important when you think about who her rival will be in November. Donald Trump, who, of course, has never held elected office and is self-admittedly very new to politics. So if voters are going into that ballot box and the voting booth in November and they're thinking, experience, who do I want in the White House? Who do I want as a president? This is who President Obama is saying is the person who can lead the country.
He definitely can work his magic when it comes to campaigning. He seemed in his element. The crowd was fired up. He said he was fired up. He used some of the slogans that he had used in his own campaign, combined them with hers, "I'm with her."
I mean, and that's really smart of President Obama to do, because he had so much youthful energy and excitement surrounding his campaign, especially the first one in 2008. Hillary Clinton could really use some of that excitement. She's, you know, self-admittedly not the world's most natural politician. She has some issues with younger voters who tended to go towards Bernie Sanders' candidacy. So having President Obama there to really fire up the crowd, remind people of that campaign excitement, that's going to be a big boost for her.
And I would imagine we're going to see a lot more of exactly what we saw at this first rally with the two of them.
Absolutely. This is just the start for President Obama campaigning for Hillary.
All right. Thank you so much, Catherine. Well, presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump did respond to the FBI decision regarding Clinton's emails as he talked to supporters at a rally of his own in North Carolina.
Everybody thought, based on what was being said, she was guilty. She was guilty. And it turned out that we're not going to press charges. It's really amazing. But I'll tell you, look, we have a rigged system, folks.
All right. Well, Clinton's big rally with President Obama was a big hit on social media, as well as the emails. Let's talk about all of it with our social media guru, G. Abby Lee. Hi, G.
Hi, Lori. Clinton's intro and Mr. Obama's speech were both streamed live on our Facebook page. It was captioned as, "Live from Charlotte, President Obama hits a trail with Hillary for the first time in this campaign." During the peak of the event, more than 17,000 people tuned in.
Wow, that's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So she's definitely known to have a savvy team of social media managers. Is it safe to assume they were also live tweeting the event?
You bet. They were live tweeting even before the event started. The Democratic duo was going hard against Donald Trump, even mentioning him by name in their speeches. Here's an example. When introducing President Obama, Clinton said, "He is someone who has never forgotten where he came from. And Donald, if you're out there tweeting, it's Hawaii." Her team tweeted the remark.
Yes, I'm sure the president got a kick out of that comment, didn't he? And what about Donald Trump? Did he tweet a response to the rally?
So, strangely enough, neither of them tweeted about it yet, and I doubt President Obama or the White House will in the future. But before the president's speech, Trump sent out two tweets about his rival. Specifically, he was tweeting about FBI Director James Comey's recommendation on our email investigation. Comey recommended no charges. Trump even created a new hashtag called #riggedsystem. He argued Comey's recommendation is very unfair and reflective of a bad judgment. Now, before I go, I also want to mention that President Obama will be taking over Clinton's Instagram account during their time in Charlotte. That's all for me today. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. A Russian ex-Guantanamo detainee is linked to the Turkey airport attack. Top British lawyers eye a legal challenge to Brexit. Clinton and Trump eye vice presidential running mates. A homeless man is detained in Rome in the death of a U.S. student. Camcord allows you to broadcast your phone screen. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Masters of the appearance of momentum, Islamic State operatives seem to be making good on the group's carefully cultivated plans to remain the world's dominant terror organization. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden has more.
A funeral procession in Baghdad, one of many for victims of Saturday's attack claimed by the Islamic State terror group. But as the search for survivors winds down, U.S. officials lament more such attacks cannot be ruled out.
We're not surprised that ISIL is able to strike in some fashion like this. And this was clearly a devastating attack. And a painful reminder of the lethal capabilities of ISIL.
A U.S. counterterror official tells VOA it is still too early to say for sure whether Islamic State is responsible for the wave of attacks over the past 10 days that have hit Turkey, Bangladesh, Malaysia, Indonesia, and even the holy Saudi Arabian city of Medina. But former intelligence officials like Malcolm Nance are worried.
All of this is indicative of a directed, organized strategic bombing campaign from ISIS proper, who has coordinated all of these attacks, but let the locals carry them out as they saw fit.
Already, Islamic State is promising more of the same. According to the site Intelligence Group, a video now available on the internet shows two men who identify as fighters from Bangladesh. They praise the July 1st attack on a bakery that killed more than 20 people and promise more such operations are in the works. Michael Kugelman is at the Woodrow Wilson International Center.
In Bangladesh, you have militants who are willing to and would like to identify with ISIS and are happy to claim attacks in their name.
Even if this latest wave of Islamic State violence begins to ebb, U.S. intelligence officials fear Islamic State is well enough positioned to use such symbolic victories to its advantage, continuing to build a narrative of a powerful movement that cannot be stopped. Malcolm Nance, who now heads the Terror Asymmetrics Project, also fears the terror group is sophisticated and savvy enough to maintain that deadly tempo, even as it suffers losses on the battlefield.
As ISIS starts to lose its manpower and its central caliphate starts being destroyed, which may happen in the next year, ISIS is going to devolve into what I call the ghost caliphate, where everything is done. They go completely covert. Everything is done via the internet.
Officials warn stopping an organization with that type of ability to enable or inspire attacks will put even more pressure on governments already struggling to stop determined groups of individual jihadists with no fear of death.
All right, that was our national correspondent Jeff Selden reporting. Turning to the deadly attack at an upscale restaurant in Dhaka last weekend that left 28 people dead. A day after the siege, Al-Qaeda had claimed responsibility, and then the Islamic State said it was responsible. But government officials say it was carried out by a band of young Bangladeshi men.
This is a tremendous escalation in terms of the kind of terrorism we have been experiencing in Bangladesh. This has been something that could possibly be inspired by the Islamic State, but we are fairly confident that all the perpetrators are domestic and that these perpetrators do not appear to have had any two-way communication or contact with the Islamic State.
Counterterrorism expert Ajal Sani with the Institute of Conflict Management in New Delhi tells the AP that it does speak to a deeper divide in the mostly moderate Muslim nation, which has pitted secularists against those yearning for Islamic rule since the country won independence from Pakistan in a bloody war in 1971.
This is a very bloody and a very personal history. It's not just a question of ideology and, you know, political differences. This is personal. I do not believe that as long as the two principal players in Bangladesh remain Sheikh Hasina and her family and Begum Khalida and her family, that any kind of resolution of this polarization would be possible.
Meanwhile, Japan's foreign minister Fumio Kishida said Tuesday he feels deep sorrow and strong indignation as the bodies of seven Japanese nationals killed in the attack returned home. The victims were among 20 hostages and two police officers killed Saturday. 13 hostages were rescued when Bangladeshi security forces stormed the restaurant, killing six of the attackers and capturing another. Well, the U.S. space agency NASA and a team of scientists and engineers Tuesday successfully placed the Juno spacecraft in orbit around the solar system's largest planet, Jupiter, capturing a five-year, 2.8-billion-kilometer voyage from Earth. The ecstatic team at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, took turns speaking in a news briefing Monday night.
What a feeling. A mission of this complexity to accomplish tonight is just truly amazing. And it really highlights the partnership and the teamwork between NASA and our contractors and our partners to be able to achieve this amazing, amazing mission. Let me turn this over now to Diane Brown.
I was asked to talk about what it feels like to have this success, and it's just, I mean, it's overwhelming. The amount of time and effort everyone put into this and the risks that were overcome, it's amazing. I mean, the more you know about the mission, you know just how tricky this was, and to have it be flawless. I mean, I really can't put it into words. You imagine what it might feel like, but to actually have it, to know that we can all go to bed tonight not worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow, it's pretty awesome. So that's really all I can say. It's just amazing. So, Scott, how do you feel?
NASA did it again. That says it all to me. And I am so happy to be part of the team that did that. I mean... This team has worked so hard, and we have just such great people. And it's just it's almost like a dream coming true right here.
Well, Juno will take the next 20 months to study the planet with scientists, hoping to learn more about its formation and that of the rest of the solar system. Morris Jones, an independent space analyst based in Australia, tells VOA's Victor Beatty that Juno is not the first space probe of Jupiter.
Despite the fact that Jupiter has been visited by so many probes in the past, there are still a lot of unanswered questions and areas on the planet that haven't been even approached by any particular space probe.
This is a mission that is fraught with a lot of risks.
I'd say that the greatest risk of all is radiation. Jupiter looks very tranquil in photographs, but what you can't see are the massive radiation belts that are so strong that they'd probably kill any astronauts who went there. So we'll probably never send astronauts this close to the planet. And in fact, most robot space probes would be fried in terms of their electronics if they even got this close. And for that reason, the Juno probe has a lot of radiation protection on board.
There was one other spacecraft sent around Jupiter earlier called the Galileo. What's the difference between Juno and Galileo?
Galileo was like a very broad survey of Jupiter and its moons. It was a very long mission, and it had a lot of instruments and a lot of different scientific goals. The Juno mission that's about to arrive is focused on a smaller set of questions, but it's all about finding out answers to some of the questions that the Galileo space probe could not answer. And one way that it's doing that is that it's going to in a very different orbit. Galileo was orbiting fairly close to Jupiter's equator, whereas the Juno probe will be practically going pole to pole, roughly 90 degrees to the sort of orbit that Galileo used.
Scientists are hoping during this mission to determine whether or not there is water on Jupiter. What significance would that hold?
Water is part of the whole mass balance of the solar system, and the more water that Jupiter soaks up, the less water there is for other planets. And so this gets back to one of the big questions that Juno's trying to answer. What went into Jupiter didn't go into any of the other planets, and so it's a case of looking at just what happened to the solar system as a whole. And Jupiter is very significant given the fact that it's the largest planet and it weighs more than the rest of the solar system put together, except for the sun, of course.
This was a long mission. This spacecraft was launched 5 years ago.
Jupiter is right in the middle of the solar system. It takes a long time to get there because of the angles of the planets, and also because if you want to go there quickly, you would have to burn more fuel. Now, it wasn't really critical to rush to Jupiter quickly because, I mean, there were no astronauts on board, so they took a fuel-efficient trajectory that took longer but meant that they could save money with a smaller rocket.
Well, Juno's computers and science instruments are encased in a vault for protection against that radiation as the spacecraft begins its 37 orbits around Jupiter before being allowed to disintegrate in 2018. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is International Edition on VOA. Coming up, lots of big Hollywood news, including a petition against an actor of the hit series Grey's Anatomy. But first, the millions of people who cannot attend but plan to watch the Summer Games in Rio de Janeiro will be able to feel like they're actually there. Technology reporter Chris Morris here to talk about what will be a first for the Olympics. Hi, Chris. What are we hearing?
Well, NBC is going to be partnering with Samsung to bring virtual reality to the Rio Games. The network is going to offer 85 hours of VR programming, so it's not insubstantial. It's going to be viewable on the Samsung Gear VR headset. You can get one of those for about $100 or a little bit less right now. It's a lot cheaper than other headsets that are out there. But you're going to need a state-of-the-art Samsung phone to really take advantage of this. So you're going to need like an S7 or something like that to go with it. Now, there are a couple conditions with this. You're going to need a cable TV or satellite subscription. So if you're a cord cutter, it's not a lot of help. Also, it's going to be time delayed. So you won't be able to watch it live, but you get the extra effect of being able to turn around and see things from different angles that you will not on TV.
That sounds cool, Chris. What will we see? What will they be showing?
You're actually going to get to see some of the really good stuff. You're going to see the opening and closing ceremonies. You'll see gymnastics, track and field, beach volleyball is going to be included, fencing, boxing, diving, and men's basketball. So there's a lot of options. Pretty much if you're watching Olympics for just one thing, odds are you're going to get to see it.
How much significance does this have for the world of virtual reality?
Well, virtual reality is really just in its infancy right now. A lot of people say that it's, early innings. It's not early innings. It's the tailgate party before the game even starts. But there's a lot of interest in it, and pre-orders are really starting to take off. Samsung has sold 300,000 of these Gear VR units in Europe this year alone. In April, more than 1 million people have used the device. So it's starting to grow pretty fast, and this is a chance for it to be shown on a global stage. And you can bet that Samsung's really going to take advantage of this and push these models even more.
So, Chris, this is something you would attach to your computer. How expensive is it?
The Gear VR actually is something that you attach to your cell phone. So it's a headset that you wear. It costs about $100. Samsung's giving away a lot of those for free, too. There are other virtual reality headsets. There's the Oculus Rift. That cost about $600 as a standalone unit. You attach that to your computer, and you need a really state-of-the-art computer, so that's another $1,000 or so. There's the HTC Vive, which lets you walk around a room and fully experience 3D space with virtual reality. That's $800, and again, you need a top-notch computer. And later this fall, Sony's going to be putting out a virtual reality headset for the PlayStation 4. Now, that's only going to be about $400, plus the PS4 is a lot cheaper than the computers that you will need for those other two headsets.
All right, thanks so much, technology reporter Chris Morris. Now let's turn to the latest happenings in Hollywood with our friend Jennifer Perro, senior news editor for Entertainment Tonight. Hi, Jen. Lots of celebrating over the holiday weekend.
Lots of folks were out for the 4th of July weekend here in the U.S., especially in the East Coast, but Taylor Swift had her big annual 4th of July party at her luxurious mansion up in Rhode Island this weekend. Of course, it's the fourth year of her huge party that she throws this weekend every single year. And, of course, it was jam-packed with members of her squad, Carly Kloss, Gigi Hadid, a very pregnant Blake Lively was there with her husband Ryan Reynolds, Cara Delevingne, Uzo from Orange is the New Black. So Taylor's friends, of course, were joined by her very new boyfriend, Tom Hiddleston, who wore a T-shirt that says, "I'm with TS." So definitely the two of them were packing on a lot of PGA on the beach up in Rhode Island. And then across the Atlantic, George and Amal Clooney celebrated their 4th of July Italian style over in Lake Como. And Amal, it's the first time that we've seen these two together in a couple of months. She's been really busy working as a lawyer in London. George has been filming a movie. So this is the first time we spotted the somewhat newly married couple. They have their wedding anniversary coming up shortly, but we spotted them in Lake Como holding hands and having a very romantic dinner. So 4th of July, yes, was a lot of fun for many stars here.
But there's also some controversy brewing over one of the stars of a very, very popular show.
Yeah, you know, Jesse Williams, who, of course, is one of the stars on Grey's Anatomy, which is a favorite show all over the world. He gave a pretty passionate speech at last week's BET Awards. Now, he accepted a humanitarian speech. He went up there and he started, you know, talking and standing up for people of color. And he's getting a lot of backlash about it. And now Change.org has started a petition, and they're trying to get him kicked off of the show. They're calling for ABC and creator Shonda Rhimes to kick him off, saying that Jesse Williams spewed a racist hate speech against law enforcement officials and white people at the BET. If this is a white person making the same speech about African Americans, they would have been fired immediately and globally chastised, as they should be. We want him off the show. He actually is out on vacation right now with the other star of the show, Ellen Pompeo. The two of them are joined with their families out in Hawaii. So definitely the two of them are getting along. His co-stars and cast members don't want him kicked off the show. But, you know, they're definitely getting a lot of signatures. So it should be interesting to see what it's going to bring.
You never want to see a celebrity have to give up their job for comments they've made off the screen when they're so popular on screen.
Yeah, and, you know, especially with social media, too, you have a lot of actors, actresses, you know, musicians who will go on social media or who will even go up on stage after accepting an award. You know, Leo DiCaprio did it when he accepted his Best Actor Oscar award. In his speech, he talked about global change and you know, saving the planet. So, you know, I definitely think that all actors do take this time to voice their personal opinions. You know, we definitely don't want to see anyone getting fired over it. So hopefully that won't be the case.
Well, thanks so much. That was Jennifer Perro, Senior News Editor for Entertainment Tonight. You've been listening to International Edition. We're glad you could join us today. Find us anytime at voanews.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Follow me at Lori London. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Mark Ferguson. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Colombian government and leader of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, agreed to a bilateral ceasefire pact on June 23rd, paving the way for a final peace deal that would end the 52-year civil conflict. This war has taken the lives of an estimated 220,000 people and forced nearly 7 million Colombians from their homes. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry welcomed the news. "I am pleased that after more than 4 years of intensive talks, the Colombian government and the FARC have achieved breakthroughs on some of the most challenging issues before them. Although hard work remains to be done, the finish line is approaching and nearer now than it has ever been." Under the terms of the agreement, the rebels will gather in 23 protected zones and 8 camps, where they will disarm in phases after a final accord is reached. Colombian government forces will provide security, and United Nations observers will be present in the camps to oversee the process and mediate disputes. For many years, and on a bipartisan basis, the United States has supported Colombia in its efforts to strengthen its democracy and safeguard the security of its people. That friendship will continue as Colombia's leaders strive to complete the peace process and take steps to recover from the many years of division and conflict. To this end, the United States will work closely with Colombia to ensure that commitments made during negotiations yield tangible benefits for the country's citizens. In February, President Obama announced Paz Colombia, a new strategic framework for its bilateral engagement. As part of that plan, the United States, along with Norway, is leading a global demining initiative for Colombia. The United States congratulates all Colombians as they take the final steps towards a just and lasting peace.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is 4.